right. Well, thank you guys for joining me. I know that this is a smaller room, a little bit more cozy. We already tried to get the drapes open, but hopefully nobody will fall asleep. I've got lots of interesting gifts to help you. So let's get started. Actually, I just had a question while you guys were filtering in. Who is anybody in here from Austin? Like an Austin native? No? Do you guys like this city as a conference location? I think it's pretty cool. I'm excited to be here. I've got family in town too. So, all right. So also, I need to let you know that my brand new intern made this deck. So if there are 10,000 transitions and 100 little effects, that is presumably why. All right. So like, what the heck does like social sourcing even mean, right? We talk about sourcing and recruiting and candidate experience, but it's really very simple the way that I describe it. It is getting your company in front, in the face of the people who want to work for you. And we want to make sure that instead of calling them candidates or applicants or employees or prospects, that we're calling them what they are. Right? So, again, you're going to see a lot of gifts from my sweet, his name is Bach Mai, and he's a musician as well, so he's very creative. All right, so this is rule number one. Instead of thinking of them as all of those things, you need to think of them as people. They are human beings, okay? Because if we don't start thinking of them that way, we're never going to be able to understand where they might be, understand what might motivate them. I was joking with Will. How many of you were in Will's session earlier? Well, three. Awesome. Four. Okay. He said a lot of the things that I'm going to go over today. I'm going to approach it from a slightly different perspective, but I think that Will was right on the money with a lot of the tactics that he said we should chat about. So once you do this, once you figure out that candidates, applicants, which seems very obvious, that they're people, we can start to tear down some of the barriers that social has created. Because, you know, we've done a lot of amazing things with social media. 8 out of 10 Americans is on some form of social media. We use it for our job search. We use it to find people to date and marry. We use it to find friends and things that we're interested in. But it can also be really, really bad, right? We see it in the hateful, trolly comments on YouTube. And we see it in the political sort of discourse that has unraveled on Facebook. And you can see it with, you know, bots and trolls freaking people out on Twitter. So what we want to do is we want to sort of tear that down. So 78% of our candidates use social media in their job search, which is maybe not that surprising. Makes them more connected, but it also makes us easier to dehumanize one another, to not see you as Susan, but to see you as, you know, some random person who has a different opinion than me on the internet, or just a profile if you're recruiting. Rule number two. So it's not the size of your network, it's how you use it, okay? So can anybody tell me what he's saying here? I was in the pool! So probably most of us here have bigger networks than our family and friends, right? It's part of what we do. We have to connect with a lot of different people in order to do our job. However, those connections can be rather shallow. So you can see it when somebody gets a new job and everybody goes, congrats. Or when somebody has happy birthday and instead of a heartfelt greeting, you get an HBD, right? So that's not a meaningful connection. That's what I mean when I say, you know, we can't just collect candidates like butterflies on a board, right? It's very tired and it's very sad. It makes your network ineffective and rather dehumanizing as well. So, how many people have been asked by their best friend to join their Sensi group or their Lip Sense or things like that, right? We don't like feeling like we're being sold to. We don't like feeling like the people that care about us are just in it for the money. So I will remove this video because it's not my favorite. So in the same way, it's better to have a network of 300 people that you have a genuine connection with than have a network of 3,000 people who are just, you know, surface level. So maybe let's say you have 3,000 people in your network. Let's say you source, you know, 100 of them who have skills in some realm of the rec that you're looking to fill. And so You blast those 100 people, maybe 20 even open your email, maybe 10 of those even click on something, and maybe one or two might end up being a possible interview, right? On the other hand, in the same amount of time that you were looking through all of those unqualified and uninterested people, you could have been researching your candidates, looking into what interests them, what compels them, as Will was talking about, what are their career motivations? What do they want to happen in their own lives in the next few years? And you could have reached out to 5 really great, high-fit candidates and gotten the same results, and probably even better because you're starting to build a relationship with those candidates. So if you're trying to get someone that has 7 years of experience, right, but you have no engagement strategy, somebody with 5 years experience might not even bother applying for the role because you've just sent them a list of requirements. But you might also find somebody who has maybe, I don't know, 4 years of experience, but he's willing to invest in learning. Like, he knows that your company has additional learning stipends, so he applies for the job, and you can convince the hiring manager that maybe those additional 3 years can be dealt with over, you know, maybe a lower initial offer. Maybe your company has a corporate learning stipend. Maybe they have work from home and they don't really want to be in an office. Those are the sorts of things that we're going to learn how to find out today and be able to increase engagement. So how do you find all of this stuff? I mean, obviously you have to listen and learn. Oh, sorry, I skipped it. If you don't listen and learn, you're never going to get to the next piece. You kind of have to be a creeper if you want to be a great sourcer. It's not something we like to internalize too much, but you really do have to follow the trail of breadcrumbs that people leave. All right, so in your quest to be an amazing sourcer, sourcing is usually the first step of recruiting, right? You get the rec and you talk to the hiring manager and they tell you who you need, or you have an evergreen rec that you're always sourcing for. But I'm suggesting a pre-first step, okay? And what that is you need to build a brief persona, whether it's in your mind or on a piece of paper, of the person that you're looking for. So what that means is you have a picture of them to keep in your mind's eye. It could be a stock photo, it could be, you know, your best product analyst or whatever. You need to know what they do and how long they've been doing it, right? What's their career path? I have another presentation where I talk in depth about candidate personas. One of the best ways to figure this out is to look at places like LinkedIn to say, oh, okay, it looks like every 4 years they do this job, or it looks like in 9 out of 10 QA managers, they do these 3 jobs first, right? So you get a sense of their career path. Finally, you need to know what parts of their job they enjoy and which parts they actually dislike. And then there's some other more personal things. What keeps them up at night? That's actually the most crucial piece of any buyer persona. You know, are they getting ready to have kids and they don't know if they can afford it on their salary? Do they know more than their micromanager and they are just determined to get ahead and their company has no place there? Their career goals, as we've discussed, what are their motivating factors, right? I've seen people take a 70%, not pay cut, but take 70% of their former salary just so they could have a work flex arrangement, just so they could avoid an agonizing commute, because that takes, you know, it feels like it takes years off of your life. Where they might go online and how long they stay in one place, as we mentioned. So one of the greatest places that I like to do, besides LinkedIn, because we've talked about this before, is professional networks. This is a screenshot. Does anybody know where this is from? This is from GitHub. Because so many of the people in the audiences where I speak have trouble hiring technical folks, I thought this would be a great one to look at. So there's a lot of things that you can tell, and this is just the overview piece. All right, so you know his name. What I tend to think when I see somebody's name is that they're open for business, right? They are more than just a passive candidate. If I see my husband, actually, is also on GitHub, and he's on GitHub as Red Branch Media. Obviously, he's going to have loyalty to our company, but you can tell, like, okay, this person, you know, has no face. They just have the avatar, and they just have, you know, either a fake name or the name of their company. You probably want to put them a little bit lower in your contact list. You can tell where they are. You can see if they have further websites and things like that. Here's all the organizations, and if you are, you know, well-versed in technical things, you'll know what each of those stand for. you can see how many contributions they make. This says to me that this person does projects a lot, and he might be willing or interested in a contract role, or willing and interested in some part-time stuff, or even open for the right permanent role. And then you can see all of his repositories, which tell you what languages he's most proficient in, how far along he is in his career. There's all kinds of things, and especially the one that I think is the most interesting is, you can't see it here, but this is Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and this is throughout the month. So you can see how engaged they are, you know, every week over the last few weeks. And then the other thing that I do want to mention is the stars and followers piece. If somebody has a lot of stars and followers, it shows that their peers have realized that they're good at what they do. And so then you can, you know, take a couple steps and realize that they're good at what they do as well. So once you have all this information, and again, this can be either a really quick process that you use from like your instincts, or it can be a long drawn out process depending on your rec load, then what do you gotta do, right? You gotta reach out. And this is one of the things that I think is gonna be maybe a surprise to some of you. LinkedIn is still the largest source of recruiters, again, as Will Thompson said, but it's not where candidates want to see you. They prefer Facebook, with 83% of them looking at Facebook for jobs, but only 36% search on LinkedIn. That tells us we're over here making ourselves crazy with LinkedIn and all their term of service changes and yada, yada, yada. Don't tell them at Talent Connect that I said that. but we should be focusing on a more personal relationship. In fact, I would go so far as to say that you could hypothesize that the reason they want us to meet them on Facebook is because they do want a more personal approach. The other things that I do think you should look at are places like Behance, Stack Overflow, GitHub, which we just went over. But one of the things that you can also do is run ads on all of these networks just to see where your candidates do tend to flock. They're relatively low cost in all of those places, save Stack Overflow. They have their own job board, so it's a little bit pricier. But the rule of thumb that I think you need to remember is if the candidates are especially flattered when your hiring manager reaches out. So I was just in Minneapolis, and we were talking about different sourcing techniques as well. And one of whom was hiring thermonuclear engineers, got with their team. They had a sourcing party, and they would all like connect with people on LinkedIn or look at people on LinkedIn in their each individual networks. And what they did was, one person took it a step further, had the hiring manager go look on LinkedIn, because you know you can see when people look at you, and then had the person who was actually connected say, hey, my hiring manager told me to reach out to you. He thinks you'd be great for this position. And you know, because of that, candidates are especially flattered. 56% of them say they would rather have a hiring manager reach out. So if you can have that relationship with your hiring manager or use the rest of your team, and we traditionally think of that as employee referrals, but it doesn't have to be that complex. It can simply be like, hey, let's five of us get pizza and beer after work hours and go through this stuff. I know I'm going to race through this, and we're not even remotely close to done. So I want to stop right now and ask if anybody has questions about places to find these people, candidate personas, and like anything else that I've mentioned so far. Yes?
So I know that one of the big trends is making everything personalized, and that's just all of a sudden from like, hey, do you want a job? Mm-hmm.
I definitely think you should lead with the fact that you are, you know, either a recruiter or a hiring manager or something like that. I just heard another really interesting presentation about, like, VP of recruiting versus putting contract, if any of you are contract recruiters, in your title on any of these things. So that's one piece. So I definitely, like, don't try and pull a bait and switch. Don't be like, hey, how you doing? We seem like similar people, and then later do the job thing. We'll talk a little bit about that in a sec. But I also think that one of the most crucial things, and we'll also talk about this in a sec, is not talking about the job or the company or whatever. You need to talk about them. I used to do a talk where it was like, you know, people spend hundreds of thousands of dollars marketing Audis or Dooney & Burke bags or any sort of luxury item. And for a 70K job, we don't do half of that. We don't try and sell it, right? One of the things that I think is interesting is people always are like, we're a great company, we're dog friendly, we do this and we do that, instead of saying, you know, this is what I believe you can bring to the company. We're struggling with this problem and you seem like the right woman or man to fix it. So that would be my initial advice, but we'll go a little bit deeper into that in just a second, like templates and stuff and how to build them up. So the rule of thumb, make sure you reach out to them on the network wherein you found them. Okay, don't.
If it's Facebook, does it need to be from my personal account or can it be from my company's corporate account?
In the case of Facebook, it's a little trickier. It would depend on how locked up their profile is, first of all. But I would say, if you can source their email address in that case, do so. If you can't, then use your company piece. Or if you can get them to like your page, then you can, you know, do a retargeting ad with your CSV, and that's probably not the CSV, your Facebook likes. They don't give you the emails like LinkedIn used to. Okay. So, the next thing is just don't be a tool, right? So, let me ask you a question. Like, how busy are you? Like, how crazy is your life? When somebody sends you you know, Susan is the only person whose name I can read. So, dear Susan. Well, I have my glasses on now.
Okay.
You know, dear Susan, like, I think you'd be great for this, you know, Java position. It's junior level. It's in Alexandria. You're like, I don't live in Alexandria. Maybe I recruit Java people. I'm not a Java engineer. You know, like, all that stuff. So, do you respond to every half-assed request you get on Facebook or LinkedIn or any other network? No. So I don't know why we like sit here and tear our hair out that candidates don't. Of course they're not going to. They know it wasn't meant for them. So the same way that I would like toss an envelope addressed to resident in the trash, that's why you have to personalize, right? They're going to toss your in-mail that you paid for or your, you know, hours of sourcing in the trash if you don't take the time to personalize your message. So we have to take the time to care about them, essentially. And I know that it seems like, I had a young recruiter ask me recently, he's like, okay, I'm new to this. What's the one thing that you should tell me? He asked me and a whole bunch of other HR folks. And I said, honestly, the one thing would just be to take your time. It feels more efficient to upload 20,000 names into, you know, a resume database or an ATS or a CRM and then just blast out the thing. But that it won't net you the same results in the end. And that's what I really hope that you guys take away from this session is the time it takes feels a little off-putting at first, but I guarantee you it will be a more effective approach. All right, so this is kind of a little bit an answer to your question. So what can you talk or lead with when you reach out to candidates? Things they're interested in, right? Easy. The fact that they might be looking for a change or more money or a position or a bump or a chance to learn new skills. Places they might like to go, if you can see from GitHub, Facebook, or anywhere else. People that know me on pretty much any network know that I love to travel, that I travel to Europe every summer, and people are always asking me about that. Even people that, you know, I don't know face-to-face. Their work and their projects, that's one of the places where, obviously, that's a natural lead-in. Their dog, favorite comic, right? Some surface stuff. If you notice that their profile is a Batman logo, you might throw in a funny Batman reference. But here's the thing you don't mention. Like I said, we have to be creepers in order to do our job properly. So in that sort of research phase, we're probably going to find out a lot about them, right? We might see how beautiful their wife is or how cute their little baby is or even what they look like. But you don't want to mention those things because that's really creepy for them, right? Like, oh, looks like you're such a happily married man. What? Ooh, what? and how long you've been following their work. You know, you don't want to say, it's flattering if somebody appreciates your work. It's creepy if somebody says, I've been following you for the last 7 years, I think you're perfect for this role, right? That's very, I used to say single white female, but I feel like that's kind of like passe now. I don't even know if you could say that. So, but once you've hooked them, the thing is you never want to let them go. Again, Will really brought this home when he said the recruiter that I used to know, right? So we get them in the funnel. Maybe they're not right for the role that we're sourcing for now, but we take all this time to build them up, to build their ego up, to tell them about the position, and then we let them go And that's frustrating for them and hurtful. All right, so after that, we want them to tell us more, right? So, and we want to be able to tell them more so they can give us the information that we need. If they're not a fit, they're not a fit, but that doesn't mean all your work was in vain, right? We keep them in our talent pool, in our CRM. But if they are a fit, you need to give them a little bit more. So we all know the best candidates are, you know, great at their jobs, they have a good work ethic, but maybe they have a potty mouth, or maybe they want to work from home. But we'd all take a super qualified candidate that, you know, had a potty mouth if they met our expectations or our qualifications. So you have to ensure that you're doing the same thing, right? My company doesn't pay that much to its entry-level workers. We offer totally different things, right? One candidate came through because they saw us on Instagram, and they know that we allow people to have work from home and casual dress, and we have wine on Fridays, and that's the kind of place that we are. We offer pretty normal benefits and pretty normal compensation. You know, somebody who is looking for high future earnings probably wouldn't take a place at our company. So you want to make sure that you are being very, very honest about what your company gives. Actually, I think you should be brutally honest, right? So if you're work hard, play hard, don't say that if you're only work hard. And if you say you have competitive compensation, don't say that if you only have 12 bucks an hour. And if you say, oh, we have a casual dress code and you won't let people wear shorts or whatever, I worked for a company that just didn't allow shorts. It was very strange. But I didn't know that going in. I didn't understand that there were these sort of unwritten rules. And I think that a lot of that can be taken care of with the sourcer, with the employer brand, and some of the FAQs. So, all right. So, for example, and this is actually a great example because I have a couple of companies. We help other people with their employer brand and recruitment marketing, but we also, you know, have our own, and we're a very you know, open company, very LGBTQ friendly, very, you know, pro diversity in the workplace, of all sorts. So that's important to us. So what we want to do with our brand is allow candidates to self-select in and out. What I mean by this is, if your company talks about like the gender gap and the maternity and paternity leave and equality quite frequently, you're going to attract people to whom equal rights matter. If on the other hand, you might turn away those who, well, my writer wrote with more traditional values, but I said who hate women. either way, you want people to be a cultural fit. No amount of money or benefit or, you know, learning is going to allow them to accept a culture that violates their very fabric of being. So, we already discussed this. We want to make sure that we're not lying. Again, work hard, play hard only means something if the play hard part is involved. Every company can find something that makes them different than their competitors. You just have to figure out what it is. And I know that's really easy for me to say because I do like own my company. But I also work with a lot of really large companies who have trouble sort of, you know, running those requests up the flagpole. Hey, could we maybe give them one work from home day? Hey, could we offer, you know, casual dress or telecommuting or whatever it is. All right. Sometimes we get so caught up in, this is my husband and that's me. We get so caught up in the newest sourcing tools, and those are good tools, right? HireTool, Lusha, we use MixMax, and there's another one that we use that I can't remember right now. But we do, you know, mostly old school sourcing, but you forget the things that actually attract people. And we've seen lots of applicants come through in completely unusual ways, right? Because our employees were talking about us, or because they saw an Instagram picture. Sometimes we forget the people right under our noses, is what I'm trying to say. Your employees are going to be your best ambassadors. And the reason that I drone on and on about being brutally honest is because your employees are going to be the first ones to call you out on that. If you're talking about how great your culture is and how supportive and nurturing and diverse, you know, people are going to be at the bar and be like, yeah, your company seems awesome. And I'm like, actually, you don't even know. She's a slave driver and, you know, there's not a single person of color in our office or whatever it is. So if you lie, you will get called out on it by what is essentially the opposite of employee referrals. So from that picture, they saw that we dressed casually, that it was open, we were really chill, that we drink wine quite frequently. I actually had a, this is total sidebar. My little sister is an employment lawyer, just graduated law school. It's very pleasant to speak to her a lot. And I've had this firm, you know, we have Eat and Mean every Friday, 4 p.m. It is a mandatory meeting, and we do have wine. Wine is not mandatory to drink. However, I do have quite a few, like every person on my staff is a millennial. And so she kept saying, she's like, Maren, you've got to stop giving your people wine. Like, you're going to get sued. This is going to happen. And like, you know, she was like, you could be like really in trouble if one of, if like their parents decide to sue, if they drive home inebriated. Omaha's like a really like drivey city. Like there's not a lot of transit and stuff. And so, we took it off the table. We stopped doing it. We had just regular food and just regular whatever, because we're really, we are work hard play, right? Right? We slide into home plate at every Friday at 4. Like, we are just working up to the last minute. And, like, not to make it sound like I have a company full of alcoholics, but it sucked so bad. Like, everybody was like, you know, when you just have a mandatory meeting at the end of a Friday, after you've worked your rear end off to get to that meeting, and it's like carrot sticks and hummus. So, finally, you know, I was like, oh, I have this amazing community of HR people. Like, why don't I just start asking? So I did. And so ultimately, the solution that we came up with was, you know, to make sure our insurance covered certain things, have a two-drink maximum, and then free company lifts, or, well, I don't use Uber right now, lifts home. And I just spoke to a senior employment lawyer up in Minneapolis, and I was like, this was our solution. She's like, that's a great solution. That's perfect. I was like, yeah. So anyway, wine is a big part of our culture. Your employees know you better than anyone. And even when it comes to, like, reviews, right? So many times, this is a very busy slide. So this is a local firm in Omaha, but they recruit medical, like, nurses, radiologists, stuff like that. And they're a client of ours. And when they came to us, they had nothing but, like, terrible reviews on Facebook, Glassdoor, Indeed. Everywhere you looked, they were just, you know, getting blown away. And since we started working with them, they just, like, last month were ranked number 2 for the best travel nurse companies of 2017. And the way that we did that was by empowering their recruiters to ask those people to leave reviews by putting it on the bottom of every email signature by a really stupid just pop-up, a t-shirt pop-up, like, leave a review, you get a free triage t-shirt. It didn't cost anything extra, and it really made a huge difference. And now they're seeing, you know, where before we were having to source some of those folks or, you know, pay a resume database or buy an email list or whatever, now they're getting applicants that are coming to them, which, as you know, medical staffing is an extremely difficult field to be in. So what can this look like beyond the reviews? So we can have employee mixers where prospects meet hiring managers. Maybe it doesn't even have to be one department. Maybe, accounting hiring manager can be there and talking about what it's like to work in his department, and people can each bring a friend, right? Free booze, free food goes a long way to helping people understand what it's like to work at your company. And even if they're not qualified to work in the accounting department, when they go there and they interact with the rest of your employees, you can kind of see what that looks like. Referral programs that reach far beyond just your employees, like we just talked about with triage, you can give them things, you can encourage them to do something. And it really does have to be a, not a company-wide thing, but a stakeholder-wide thing. And then just instant view inside your company, right? Taco Tuesday. I know a company that has Fancy Fridays where they all kind of dress up. Or Manic Mondays. It doesn't really matter, but if your company, if your employees are proud of their company, they're going to show it. And so you get them started in the habit. We do have an Instagram schedule at our company. We have another company that we work with. Who frequently goes to their hiring managers and says, hey, I know you need these people desperately, but if you quarterly ask your people to rate our company, it's going to help me recruit better. And when she started doing that, the gal that we worked with on the inside, she saw a real uptick in reviews, and it also made her realize that people rarely leave reviews when they're happy in the middle of their, you know, employee life cycle at your company. They're going to leave a review when they don't get hired, or when, you know, they're asked to leave with their stuff in a box, that nobody's ever going to do that. So this is an interesting story. Catherine Minshew of The Muse, I don't know if you guys are familiar, she's spoken at Kara's conferences in the past. we have like one thing in common, and that is some people might not even apply for a job they don't think that you have available, or that you don't have available at the time. So Catherine Minshew wrote a great article about this guy who I think now he's their CMO or VP of marketing, who just wrote her and said, hey, I really want to work for your company. I think it's amazing. And she didn't have a job right that moment, but because of the culture that she was putting out there, he was able to, you know, address what he knew they needed in their marketing, and she ended up hiring him. The same thing happens at Red Branch all the time. But they're relatively small, though they have a great deal of funding. We're definitely small. But a company that we worked with in Toronto had the exact same issue, right? And so we helped them solve it by asking their internal people what mattered to them. So working in an agile environment, right? They were looking for agile programmers, or I forget the exact title. But they were, you know, they're dealing with other companies in Toronto as their competition. They're also trying to recruit from Silicon Valley, which is a huge competition. And they're dealing with rapid changes. So agile was something that was important to the people that already worked there. They wanted to view project highlights and wins. They needed a sense of purpose. They wanted to be able to see or hear the hiring manager before reaching out for a job. This was actually way more important than we anticipated it would be. There was no research that showed us this. It was literally anecdotal from inside the company. I think probably because most every one of us has had a difficult time with a hiring manager, but I imagine software developers perhaps more than most. And finally, salary transparency. I don't know why we're still struggling with saying this is how much you're going to make here, even giving people a ballpark, but it really needs to start changing. I'm not saying, yeah.
I think if you give a ballpark or a range, and you're specific, you're able to hear the biggest number you ever tell them. So I always try to make that a really open and transparent conversation, knowing that first and foremost, it's all about fit. It's all about where are you and how do you work to make sure that this opportunity makes sense. And then I'll get real specific if it's not an exciting step forward or a lateral move, or even this might be an investment on your part. But I found that if you're overly transparent with candidates, like, I think that's like more of a dialogue that leaves the potential for transparency to be there. But if you're overly, you know, the range is from 70 to 85, they heard one number.
Right.
And you're done.
That's a fair point. So let me ask you this. Do you request what their current I have two questions for you. Do you request their current salary, what they're making now, I guess with benefits and everything else? And hi, Craig. And further, do you offer them anything if it's going to be an investment on their part?
Yeah. So I always ask as a data point, where are you today? What does your current situation look like?
Not really, why are you?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Was that Boston, can't ask anymore. Or New Jersey, or
yeah.
Philadelphia. Oh really?
Yeah. I mean, technically.
Wow. I've not had that experience.
No, it's like a brand new, like a month and a half ago. Yeah.
It will be in
September.
Yep.
Sorry, I wasn't trying to like throw you in recruiter jail.
Here's the value proposition for the opportunity. That's when I get real specific.
Okay.
But if it's a step forward, I make that more of an open-ended conversation.
Okay.
Whenever I've gotten real specific, it's gotten in my way. But I guess that's something we've got to.
Well, just on the East Coast for now.
Yes.
No, and I think that's good advice, right? Like, not every company can have salary transparency. You're not going to be able to offer some things in highly regulated industries and stuff like that. I'm not saying it has to be, like I said, like Buffer, where they publish every salary in every country that they work in. But having that be part of the conversation sooner rather than later, like he suggested, I think is a really good thing. So they wanted to know if the job would really suit them before applying. That's what all of this told us. So by providing a way for them to meet the hiring manager or meet the team or get a sense of the projects that they were working on, we saw a significant increase in applications, even though Agile developers is very, very competitive. The other things that you can do for stuff like that is like a day in the life or, you know, meet the team or things like that. Once we told them about the work environment, the benefits, they felt comfortable enough to proceed, which was really important to us. All right, so rule number 8, how many people in here are married? At one point, you were probably engaged. So engagement, we talk about all the time, right? It's this word that we throw around, and I don't think we often, I love this show. Hello, I'm like just watching TV. No, but it's something we throw around all the time, and we forget what an intimate act getting engaged is, right? I know that's not the only meaning that it can have, but we say it all the time, and then we continue to do the same bullshit that we've always done. Sorry, I said bullshit. So we've made social a crowded place. Like, it's kind of our fault. Whether you're a marketer or a recruitment marketer or a sourcer or an HR pro, like, you know, somebody said recently, like, LinkedIn doesn't love us, but they'll take our money. Right? We've made it the noisy place that it is. So in order to reach candidates that we have to beat, we have to put ourselves in their shoes. And that's what being engagement, that's what being engaged means. So I think engagement should be just a little like getting engaged. And so let's go through the sort of different kinds of engagement and how they can impact recruitment. All right. So the first one we have is the hidden engagement. This is totally the wrong scene from The Notebook. He's absolutely fired. Probably not. I don't know. Like millennials. No, just open the ring box. You don't have to say a bunch of words, right? Hold back some information so they ask you a little bit about what's coming next, right? Sometimes there'll be an engagement where somebody just hands them a ring. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that surrounds that, but they're not really talking too much. The goal here is to have them reach back out to you for the hidden details, right? When the woman goes, do you mean, could it be? That's what we want the candidate to do. The next one is, and this better be Jerry Maguire, so help me. Okay. You complete me, right? This is what we're talking about when we put the candidate before the job. We need to tell them how they complete the picture that we're trying to fill. They're the missing piece. We're building the puzzle. And if you go in there all like, well, our company has a 20-year history of making whatever stuff, like, nobody cares about that, right? That's kind of what we're talking about when we said making it meaningful. You know, believe me, it's hard to get millennials to want to work at a marketing agency that deals with HR and recruitment tech and does employer branding on the side. Like, it's not, like, they thought they were going to be selling Oreos or something, right? And so I have to tell them, I had to find a way to make it meaningful really early on. Like, we help people work. Every single thing we do, and unless you're a trust fund baby, you work. You're enabling that to happen. You're helping people find the right job for them. You're helping people you're making technology and the job seeking experience better. Our clients are, and then we're marketing their stuff. But still, I had to find a way, 7 steps from Sunday, to make what we do interesting. And that's what this sort of piece is about. The I get lost in your eyes kind of proposal, right? It wouldn't work very well if you got the color of their eyes wrong. So you need to understand the details about their background, right? It can't be like the other day, actually, literally Tuesday, somebody reached out to me and they said, oh my goodness, we have a junior social media manager position open and we think you'd be a great fit. Like, bitch, I own my own company. Are you kidding me? Yes, I'll manage your Twitter instead of being a CEO. That's fantastic. So that's the thing. Like, if they would have looked at my profile at all, they would have seen who I am, what I do, what my background is. Just because I spend a good deal of money in Botox doesn't mean I need a junior role. And then the Roxanne engagement. This is my favorite one. So don't use other people's words, ideas, benefits to land your candidate. Your company, like, we go back to the being brutally honest thing, your company needs to be who it is, right? So if somebody else is using the words, it's going to be inauthentic. They're going to have a bad experience, probably all the way through and past onboarding. So you can't, BS job titles or make candidates swoon with fake language that you stole from somebody else's career site. I think somebody else said this. I forget who it was. I think it was the Tradeify CEO. He's like, you know, it's not that unusual to have like a, you know, self-motivational, like all these buzzwords that we throw into our job descriptions. Everybody has that. Everybody's, you know, working hard to beat the band. Everybody's, you know, leading the world in change in XYZ area. That doesn't mean anything. What you need to find out, again, are your differentiators and being honest about them. The banana pancakes proposal. So, if you like both love the same thing or enjoy NPR, you need to find common ground with your desired candidates. Yes, sometimes opposites attract, but what's really going to bring them home is when you say, oh man, I saw that you really hated that Wonder Woman movie too, I totally get it. Or, you know, oh, this is also my favorite show, or I see that you read that this was your favorite book. It might be something a little bit more personal, but the great thing is we have access to this information via all of the networks we've already discussed before. This is the one that I think that's the most effective. And finally, the as you wish engagement. Sometimes the fewer words, the better. you can't find out more about any candidate by spending the entire time talking. And that's what this is supposed to represent, right? Like you said, like 17 words in the whole first half of the movie. And she knows, right? She finally knows how he feels about her. If you are talking and talking and talking over your candidate, you're never going to find out what they want, what they need to get out of this. So make sure that you listen as well. Much of this presentation was built from these last six engagements. Were built from a LinkedIn report that recently came out. And I think somebody else also referenced that, which was basically like, what do candidates want? They want to be contacted by a hiring manager. They want you to know the details of their background. They want you to understand where they want their career to go. And they need you to give them, they need you to nurture them, right? In marketing, we nurture prospects through the funnel. In sourcing and recruiting, we need to nurture these candidates through our own funnel, through the process, so they really understand that we're interested in what they have to offer. We know that what they have to offer is going to transform our company, and we can tell them, here's what your experience is going to be, and we can honor that promise. So we started with candidate personas. In the middle, we sort of talked about, here's how you need to speak to these people. And towards the end, we talked about these sort of six different proposals and engagements that you can use to hook them. Does anybody have any questions about any piece of that process? Did I answer your question that you had a long time ago? Do you feel like you would have an appropriate template? When I was just in Minnesota, we were talking a little bit about other candidate pet peeves. And one of them was, don't ever ask for other referrals when you contact a candidate. It makes them feel like they're not the only one. It makes them feel like they're not special. To bring home the engagement piece, it would be like, you know, will you marry me? If not, do you know anybody else who I should marry? Like, that's the equivalent. And the other thing that I thought was really interesting, who lives in a weird area that, like, nobody wants to move to? I live in Omaha. Who else?
Columbia, South Carolina.
Okay.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay. Anyone else? Yeah, so we're in Minneapolis. I'm in Omaha, right? It's like, it's not like a destination city. Maybe Cleveland a little bit. But one of the things we talked about was how little time we spend promoting the areas where we live or the areas around our companies. And the thing that struck me was I just bought a condo. And it's an Airbnb. That's what we're doing with it. And so as we built it out, Airbnb has this whole long, like, crazy involved piece where it's like, these are the restaurants nearby, here's the good places for kids, here's all of the, you know, here's the price point. Just, it's like 4 pages long. And I thought it was really interesting that, oh, is my time up? What's happening? Oh, okay. Nobody had a sign. All right, well, the last part of that is, I think it's interesting that we would spend 4 pages worth of information trying to figure out our area on a $200 a night Airbnb, and we won't do that for a $50, $70, $100,000 job. And that is it, folks. Thank you for giving me that extra 5 minutes.